Thank you for downloading from Ravi Zacharias International Ministries. Support for this podcast comes from your generous gifts and donations. You can find out more about Ravi Zacharias and the team at www.rzim.org.
Hello, friends. This is Ravi Zacharias. When you bring a report from the first quarter, you already hit the ground running starting early part of January. I was in Dallas, Texas, doing a wonderful event out there, and then went on towards the end of the month into Paris, France, at a historic conference where we were pulling together evangelists from all of the French-speaking world, Michael Ramsden, myself, and the team, and then on to other parts of the world, primarily in the university campuses in North America, at Michigan and Michigan State. What an incredible opportunity these venues provide for us as students hunger to have their questions answered. And then on to Dunedin and Auckland, New Zealand, also to university audiences. These are settings in which the cultural differences are great, but the intellectual struggles remain the same. Being in this academic arena is that to which we are called, and our entire team is involved in such settings. Thank you for standing with us. Thank you for praying with us. The year has just begun, but it has already shown itself to be exactly what we were hoping, venues where we intended to bring the gospel and see a difference in people's lives. Please stand with us. We need your support. God bless you, and thank you. Isn't that ironic? He asked the most important question a person could ever ask and refused to wait for the answer. What is truth? And he walked away. You know, you'd think he would at least want to wait and hear what Jesus has to say about what truth is.
You may know why Jesus is different than any other religious icon. You may know his message, and you may know the many titles we know him by. But do you know why he is the only answer to life's hungers and needs? Hello, and welcome to Let My People Think with Christian author and apologist Ravi Zacharias. Blaise Pascal once said, "Not only do we know God by Jesus Christ alone, but we know ourselves only by Jesus Christ. We know life and death only through Jesus Christ. Apart from Jesus Christ, we do not know what is our life, nor our death, nor God, nor ourselves." The person of Jesus Christ defines more than a worldview. He defines our very lives. Why? Ravi Zacharias addresses that question this week in his message, Is Jesus the Only Way? Here's Ravi with part one of his presentation.
I'd like to read for you a few verses of a dialogue that Jesus had in the last moments of his earthly mission here. And he's talking to Pontius Pilate. I think it is profound, this wee little interaction that Pilate has with him. And then I'll get into the talk on why I believe Jesus Christ to be the only way to God. Now, I want to make a couple of comments in qualifying the talk for tonight. I've dealt with this in many different ways in my writings. If you have read the book Jesus Among Other Gods, that's a completely different trajectory. There I come to Jesus from dealing with the answers that he gave to seven different questions that no other claimant to divine or prophetic status would ever have answered the same way. And those answers of Christ encompass such profound ideas. That's a different approach to the same subject. I've dealt with it on Jesus, unique amongst the religions of the world. And that is a different approach as well. I'm in the midst of writing a book, and the opening chapter in that book is, Who is Jesus? I've come to that from a different perspective. There I come to it from Jesus expressing his own titles about himself. The Son of Man, the Son of David, the Son of God, and Savior. Numerous different titles, which takes you in a trans-ethnic response, in a trans-prophetic response, where he presents himself as the Son of God. What I want to do tonight is bring to you the existential approach to this answer. What is it that you know in your experience which either comes as a hunger or as a fulfillment in your own life? What is it that existentially you sense from day to day that in many ways is undeniable, and how Christ addresses those hungers and those fulfillments in a very, very unique way? And I hope I can at least meet that challenge without giving a counter perspective as a legitimate alternative. Here it is, Jesus talking to Pilate, and as Pilate has got him on trial before him, and this is the way it goes. Pilate then went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Now for Pilate, this is a politically motivated statement, because he's looking for some point of leverage with which he could pin on Jesus and do away with him, to tell the Caesars, as it were, that this was on behalf of Rome. "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus says, "Is that your own idea, or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "It was your people and your chief priests who handed you over to me. What is it you have done?" So Jesus is now moving him away from the politicization of the question to something of transcending reality. Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jews. But now my kingdom is from another place." "Oh, you are a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You are right in saying I'm a king. In fact, for this reason I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "What is truth?" Pilate asked. With that, he went out. Isn't that ironic? He asked the most important question a person could ever ask and refused to wait for the answer. "What is truth?" And he walked away. You know, you'd think he would at least want to wait and hear what Jesus has to say about what truth is, having claimed to be the truth, and not only that, then giving the sequel to that, "They that are on the side of truth listen to me," meaning that the test of your intent is revealed by whether or not you actually listen to him. That's a remarkable claim to make. You've said it right. "And they that are on the side of truth listen to me." Intent is prior to content. To give truth to him who loves it not, says George MacDonald, is but to give him more multiplied reasons for misinterpretation. Did you hear that? To give truth to him who loves it not is only to give him more multiplied reasons for misinterpretation. So if you are not interested in the truth and the truth is given to you, it gives you more of a diversified option to misinterpret what it is that you have just been told. And so the hunger for truth is something that is remarkable. I remember during my days at Cambridge in England, when my family and I went into London one day, and I wanted to see a court case going on at the Old Bailey. And as I walked in there, you can go into the balcony area, step into any of the courtrooms where the trial is in progress. Unknown to us, it happened to be the trial of a man who had been charged by two girls who were minors, who had accused him of having raped them. And you sit down there in the balcony and you're looking down. It's a tiny little box seat, actually. My wife and another couple and two of our three children, and actually they were asked then to leave because of the nature of the trial. Our two girls were very young. They had to step out, and so we didn't stay long either after that. But as you looked at the man sitting there and what they charged him with doing, I kept looking at him and thinking to myself, how could he? How could this man have brutalized two little girls like that? And of course, the girls were minors, so they're not in the room. You can only hear their voices coming over a screen and a monitor, and the barristers are looking at them, and they can see them through where they're seated, and they're talking to each other. And the evidence is being given, piled up one after another, one after another, one after another. And then the defense lawyer stood up, and he went up to the monitor, and he looked at the girls. He said, "I want you to know one thing. I'm not here to scare you. I'm not here to take anything away from you. And if there's something I say you don't understand, please stop me. I want you to understand one thing. I only want to know the truth." So that's all I want to ask. I only want you to tell me the truth. When I ask you a question, tell me the truth, and then we will get to the truth and find out what actually happened on that day. So he started his questioning, and he went something like this. Now, when did this happen? And they both sort of gave some dates. It happened to be 2 months prior to the fact that they told their parents it had happened. And he starts to ask them separately for what it was, the sequence of events and so on. And you could obviously expect divergent answers. They were kids. It was so long ago. And we were not at all surprised that the answers were not always coinciding. Then he started to mount a series of questions which were actually quite implicating one way or the other. He said, now, is it true that on the day this happened, you girls were actually in such and such a place, and he came up to you, seeing you there, and he said, what are you two girls doing here? You ought not to be here. When I get home, I'm going to come and see your mommy and daddy and tell you what you both were doing. Is it true that happened on the day that you said this actually happened to you? One of them said, I can't remember. And the other one said, I don't know. I don't know. And hood and hard. As the questions were unfolding, a strange phenomenon took place in all of us, including our two little girls. We did not know what was the truth. Was he being set up, or was it the usual trick of intimidating the victim so that they get so confused and they end up ultimately being the cause of it rather than the victims of it, as so often happens in a rapacious case? This kind of thing can happen. You confuse the victim, and before you know it, the victim actually looks like the cause. And I remember sitting there thinking to myself, this is one case. In a world of immense problems, how important it is that we know the truth, so that if indeed the man is guilty, he pays the due reward of what it is that the law expects of him. Or if he's being set up for some other reason to avoid the implications of something else, then that his name not be tarred and marred for the rest of his life. Ladies and gentlemen, if in one instance of a supposed criminal act, where there's a victim and a perpetrator, with his unknown in the court case at this point, that the truth be known, how much more imperative it is that the truth be known of what your life is about, from whence you came, where you are headed, and what journey you must take. Very recently, the atheistic philosopher Michael Ruse made an incredible comment. Ruse is one of those atheists who at least you have respect for when he makes the argument, because he's candid on where the weaknesses of the argument and where the ideology is driving the argument. And he said this when he was in the Arkansas trial and on the whole creation versus evolution thing that was being tested out. He said, this very recent article, he says, I stood in front of one of the leading proponents of the design movement, Duane Gish, who wrote the book, Evolution, the Fossils Say No. He said, and I went with him toe-to-toe, but there was one thing Duane Gish said to me. Michael Ruse says this distinguished professor of the philosophy of science. He said, Professor Duane Gish said to me, he said, Dr. Ruse, he said, you atheists who are skeptics and scientists are unfair to us. You accuse us of having a religion. Because a religion talks about origin and then destiny, and then it talks about, therefore, the map for life, however you choose to get there, but this is where you came from, this is where you're headed, and so we have the directions of how we are to live thereby because of the implications of these two. He says, the truth of the matter is, Mr. Ruse, you have the same thing. You have a definition of origin, you have a definition of destiny, you have a map that you want to follow, you also have an icon, and his name is Darwin. That's whom you are ultimately worshiping, and the ideology is going far beyond science. Michael Ruse says this in that article. I could not get away from that challenge by Duane Gish. And as I flew back, I had to come to the conclusion, he's right. He said, he's right. We have gone beyond the pale of science and talked about parameters and metaphysics and morality and all of that, which is not within the purview of the empirical sciences. Ruse admitted that. So I say to you today, when we are talking about the truth, let us understand that we are making a commitment to the defining parameters of all of life, not just one court case in question involving one man and a little girl. It is imperative that they found the truth in that case, even though it affected a handful of people. What we talk about tonight affects all of humanity, if Jesus is indeed who he claims to be. The great skeptic Lecky, in his book A History of European Morals from Augustus to Charlemagne, says this: "The character of Jesus has not only been the highest pattern of virtue, but I must admit it's been the strongest incentive in its practice and has exerted so deep an influence that it may be truly said that the simple record of 3 short years of active life has done more to regenerate and to soften mankind than all of the disquisitions of philosophers and all of the exhortations of moralists." This is from a skeptic, Lecky, that no one has influenced Western philosophy and thinking more in ethics and decency than Christ. And Dr. F.F. Bruce, in responding to Lecky's comment, says this: "That is a non-Christian, or at least a not distinctively Christian, judgment of one sense in which Jesus is not only a historical figure, but also our eternal contemporary. We who live in the West flirt with danger. We think we can evict God and evict the Judeo-Christian worldview and still live with the implications of what that worldview actually entailed." I was being interviewed by a New York Times journalist some time ago, in the last 6 weeks or so, and he was talking to me about the economic crisis and what that's doing in churches and so on. And I said to him, "Now, I know you're not accustomed to this, but before you begin your interview on the economic crisis, can I ask you a question?" He said, "What is it?" I said, "Here is the question. All these years in our MBA programs and in the Ivy League schools, whether it's Harvard or whether it's Princeton or Yale or whatever it is, we teach our business students that ethics is all relative, who believed ethics was relative and morality is relative. Then when they started to live it out, we put them behind bars." I said, "Why are we imprisoning them for believing their professors? You should be imprisoning the professors too if what they did was wrong." Silence. It's interesting how we talk about ideas but don't think of their ramifications. And so I want to take a look at this Christ in the time that I have, and it's not much, but let me introduce you to some ideas which are foundational and basic. But in the middle of that, you will find some answers to the questions or the affirmation of your hungers. The first is this: the affirmation of Jesus that man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. So the fundamental definition that Jesus gives humanity is that we are at our core spiritual beings of essential worth, transcending bread, going beyond that. I don't know if you've ever looked at the questions people ask Jesus. You know, it's fascinating. If you had a moment, Larry King, when he was asked this question, if you were to interview one person across history, who would that be? He said, "I'd like to interview Jesus Christ." And they said, "What is the question you'd ask him?" He said, "I'd have one question for him which would define everything else for me: if he indeed was virgin born." Larry King was right, because that alone would have introduced him to the possibility of the miracle or the lie on the basis of which it was all made. So man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. So this brilliant guy comes to Jesus to ask him a question. Now, we get asked a lot of questions. I recall some time ago being in Newark Airport, and I just got off the plane. When you come after these 16-hour journeys, you're really not sure you've arrived. And you can be almost sure your bags have not, but you're there. And so I walked over to this gate and I saw on the marquee, but the plane was going somewhere else other than Atlanta. So I leaned over to a woman sitting in the corner. I said, "Excuse me, ma'am, is a flight at this jetway going to Atlanta or is it somewhere else?" She said, "No, this is Atlanta, but they've just got the wrong flight number on there." And so I said, "Okay, thank you." I turned around to walk away and I heard this patter of feet rushing behind me. And I turned around, I thought I'd said something wrong. She said, "Are you Ravi Zacharias?" I said, "I'm afraid I am." I said, "Yes." She said, "Phew, I didn't know you had questions too." I said, I have a lot. She said, I hear your radio program. You're always answering questions. I didn't know you had questions too. I said, ask my professors. They'll tell you I didn't have the answers most of the time either, leave alone the questions, constantly asking them. This guy comes to Jesus and says, is it all right to pay taxes to Caesar? Tell me the truth. Don't you wish Jesus had given a different answer? How marvelous it would have been if he'd said, absolutely not. And then when April 15th comes around, you with a clenched fist give transcendent leverage to a very delighted moment and say, I'm not sending you a penny. Then we would have all qualified for political office and gone on from there. That's what happens when you don't speak from notes. This guy says to Jesus, is it all right to pay taxes to Caesar? Jesus, brilliant. He said, do you have a coin? Gives him a coin. He says, whose image is on this coin? And says, Caesar. Jesus says, give to Caesar that which is Caesar's, and to God that which is God's. He should have had a follow-up question. You know what the follow-up question should have been? What belongs to God? And you know what the answer would have been? Whose image is on you? You belong to God. No one paid you a greater compliment, more realistic than Jesus himself. No, you're not divine, nor are you the scum of the earth. There is that reality of the Imago Dei. It is interesting. Pilate here says, Ecce Homo, behold the man. Behold the man. The man who said to us that you are made in his image and conformed to be in the image of Christ ultimately. And so the reality is of that spiritual imprint. It is upon you. You will never stop hungering for a spiritual relationship in your life. You'll never stop hungry. You may stifle it. Even one or two atheists that I've spoke to, you take a man like Charles Templeton, one of the most famous atheists in Canada of the previous 30 or 40 years, a good friend of Billy Graham. Billy and he started off at the same time. And Billy had profound influence on Templeton's life. Templeton was a Youth for Christ director, became a pastor of a leading church in Toronto, which was later on succeeded by the famed A.W. Tozer. When Templeton walked away from God, as he said, writing the book, bidding God farewell, somebody looked at him and interviewed him. Lee Strobel said to him, where is Jesus in your life now? Templeton says, I miss him. I miss him. There was something of the wholesomeness of life that was given in the knowing of Christ.
We can search for purpose in this world through things like money, fame, material items, or relationships. But only the knowledge of being made in God's image can provide true meaning. You've been listening to Ravi Zacharias in part one of his message, Is Jesus the Only Way? If you'd like to purchase a complete copy of his presentation, simply call us at 1-800-448-6766 and request the title by name. That number again is 1-800-448-6766. In Canada, call 1-800-803-3829. You can also order online at rzam.org. While you're there, you can find out more about our full selection of resources, including links, articles, and audio downloads. All of our materials are designed to encourage you in your walk and address life's most important questions. If you enjoy the content you hear on this broadcast, you may also be interested in our daily email publication, A Slice of Infinity, which examines the intersection of faith and culture. Our site is also a great way to find out more about the ministry initiatives of RZIM, such as the Oxford Centre for Christian Apologetics and our humanitarian arm, Wellspring International. Simply go to our homepage and click on the tab Initiatives. That's rzim.org. If you're listening in Canada, the website is www.rzim.ca. While you're on the web, let me also suggest you take a look at RZIM's YouTube channel. There you can find the video of some of our broadcasts. We're adding videos to that site every month, so be sure to check back often to see the latest entries. Once you get to YouTube, just search for RZIM Media. The rise of secular gods, such as atheism, scientism, and more, presents a serious challenge to the absolute claims of Christ. The Christian worldview has not only been devalued and dismissed by modern culture, but its believers are openly ridiculed as irrelevant. In their new book, Jesus Among Secular Gods, Ravi Zacharias and Vince Vitale skillfully point out the fallacies in those claims and present compelling evidence for revealed absolute truth as found in Jesus. This new book, Jesus Among Secular Gods, is available online at rzim.org. Next week, the second half of Ravi Zacharias' message titled, Is Jesus the Only Way? Let My People Think is a listener-supported radio ministry and is furnished by Ravi Zacharias International Ministries, Atlanta, Georgia.